Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi highlights the importance of Muslim unity while addressing the International Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran. Iran's Special Representative for Afghanistan says economic and security problems of the country are a result of 20 years of U.S.-led occupation. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. An explosion has hit the Turkish capital Ankara, wounding two police officers. Officials saying the two assailants arrived in a commercial vehicle around 600 GMT and staged the attack. Now, one of them blew himself up in front of the minister building, and another one was neutralized. The Interior Ministry has called the incident a terrorist attack. The explosion happened just hours before the parliament was due to reconvene. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan condemned the attack in his speech during today's opening of the parliament. Kurdish PKK terrorist group has claimed responsibility. The explosion was the first in Ankara since 2016. Now, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi calling for unity among Muslims, slamming any divisive move in the Muslim world as in line with enemies' objectives. He told the 37th International Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran that Palestine remains the main issue of the Muslim world and a rallying point. The president called for supporting the Palestinian resistance, taking a swipe at attempts to normalize relations with Tel Aviv. Raisi said that those attempts are being pushed by enemies' puppets. The president noted that the U.S. and Israel are waging a hybrid war on Muslims, also by backing Takfiri's crimes and insulting moves against Muslim sanctities. He noted, however, that Muslims should work together and use their potential to secure their place in the emerging new world order. Now, Palestinian children have marked the Arab Child Day with a protest in Gaza against the inhumane practices of Israel. Palestinian children have long suffered under the Israeli occupation. Ashraf Shannon has details in his report from Gaza.
Dozens of Palestinian children held a sit-in on Sunday in front of the United Nations office in Gaza. They protested against the Israeli blockade, which is in place since 2007. And the regime's human rights violations, especially against Palestinian children. Israeli forces have killed and injured thousands of Palestinian children over the past decade with impunity, as the international community turned a blind eye to the regime's crimes. The Gaza Strip is home to over 2 million people. Children under 18 constitute 55% of the territory's population.
We're suffering from the screams and the buzzing and the bombing. We can't handle that anymore. We're children. We want to live freely. We want to live. We want to explore. We want to experience what life is. It's unfair to see what's happening to us. It's unfair. We can't live like this anymore. We want to live freely like the other children. We want to have our rights.
The children also marked the Arab Child Day. It was first observed on October 1st, 2000, to honor 12-year-old Mohammed Al-Durra, who was killed by Israeli soldiers in Gaza. Organizers of the sit-in accused the international community of simply ignoring the plight of Palestinian children.
Palestinian children face suffering because of the Israeli blockades and aggressions. Children in Gaza suffer from psychological pressure because of the inhumane Israeli practices. The world has abandoned Palestinian children. We are here to call on the international community to help the children of Gaza.
The inhumane Israeli blockade has taken its toll on all aspects of life for Palestinian children in Gaza. It has negatively affected their access to education, medical treatment, and their freedom of movement.
Israel siege has been giving us the worst time, the worst life. We've been suffering, we've been dying, we've been killed. And it's unfair. We want to receive our medicine. We want to receive a life like every child out there. It's unfair to live like this under the siege. It's unfair. We are children like any child in the world.
Arab Child Day highlights the ongoing plight of those born under Israeli occupation and blockade.
Besides their traumatic experiences during Israeli wars, Palestinian children face an uncertain future. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
More than 2 years after the chaotic and deadly U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, Washington continues to use the country as a platform to destabilize regional states, that according to Iran's special representative for Afghanistan.
Even though the Americans have left Afghanistan, they're still continuing their mischief. Support for Daesh terrorism is still on the agenda. So are the issues of instability and insecurity. Making the conditions in Afghanistan a cause of concern for regional countries is still on the agenda.
Kazemiromi added that the economic and security challenges in Afghanistan today are mainly due to more than 20 years of occupation by U.S.-led NATO forces. He said that the U.S. and its allies destroyed Afghan's security foundations and economic infrastructure. The official was speaking following the fifth meeting of the Moscow format in Afghanistan, held in the Russian city of Kazan. Representatives and senior officials from different regional countries such as Iran, India, Russia, China, and Afghanistan took part in that event. Kazemiromi said that neighboring countries agreed that a collective and innovative regional approach is needed to change the situation in Afghanistan in cooperation with the Taliban rulers in Kabul. Tehran urging the full and faithful implementation of the security agreement with Iraq to disarm and relocate terrorist groups operating at the two countries' border region. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council said that the agreement guarantees the security of the border. Ali Akbar Ahmadian made a comment after meeting with Iraqi National Security Advisor Qasem al-Araji in Tehran. He stressed that there are numerous potentialities for closer cooperation between the two countries, especially in economy. For his part, Araji reaffirmed Iraq's determination to implement the security deal with Iran. He noted that Baghdad would use any opportunity to strengthen relations with Tehran. Azerbaijan says that a UN mission has arrived in Nagorno-Karabakh mainly to assess the humanitarian needs there. It's the first time in about 3 decades that a UN has managed to access the region. This as nearly all of the estimated 120,000 residents of Nagorno-Karabakh have left for Armenia following a recent brief military operation by Azerbaijan. Yerevan has accused Baku of a campaign of ethnic cleansing, but Azerbaijan denies the claim and has publicly called on ethnic Armenians to stay. Authorities say that 35,000 people are now in temporary accommodation. Now, the British government says it wants to deploy military instructors to Ukraine. The Defense Minister, Grant Shapp, says that the opportunity arose following a discussion with British military chiefs on Friday. He says the western part of Ukraine has a better condition for such an opportunity in particular. This as the Ukrainian armed forces are receiving training in Britain and other Western countries. The UK has provided 5-week military training courses to around 20,000 Ukrainians over the past year. London also saying that the British defense companies have plans to set up arms factories in Ukraine. A pro-Russia party has won general elections in NATO member state Slovakia. The party is critical of the Western military alliance and wants better relations with Moscow. Now to discuss that, we were joined by our guests in the News Review program.
Time now for the News Review of this bulletin. The pro-Russia party wins general elections in NATO member state Slovakia. With almost all votes counted, leftist Smer SD party, led by the former premier Robert Fico, obtained over 23% of the votes. That left the party's main rival, the centrist Progressive Slovakia, in second place on 17% of the votes. Robert Fico's party now needs to enter a coalition to form a government. Fico seeks to end military aid to Ukraine, wants better relations with Russia, and is critical of the European Union and NATO. He has pledged not to send a single round of ammunition to Ukraine from Slovakia, which has been one of Europe's biggest donors to Kiev as a share of its GDP. Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst, joins us from Brussels. We also have Greg Simmons, who's an independent researcher and author, who joins us from Uppsala, Sweden. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Gilbert Doctorow, first over to you. So a pro-Russia party, who's a NATO member, has won a general election. What type of impact will that have when it comes to the wider, war?
It would be premature to celebrate this victory because it's a qualified victory. As you remarked, the voter returns show that his party is a minority party. There is no single majority party in Slovakia. This means that Mr. Fico or Fico has the opportunity to form a coalition government, and he will clearly, in the coming days and weeks, be reaching out to the many small parties in Slovakia to try to achieve a parliamentary majority. His victory in forming a cabinet is not assured. Moreover, what compromises he may have to make on his key points, which you have mentioned, better relations with Russia, end to sanctions, and no further military assistance to Ukraine, how much of this will get through the negotiating process with coalition partners is not yet clear. Nonetheless, it is of groundbreaking importance that a NATO country in Central Europe, a country that has known very well the experience of Soviet occupation for the Cold War period, has made this dramatic show in favor of normal relations with Russia and against the EU and NATO policies that, Mr. Fico says, are undermining national sovereignty.
What do you think about the unity that exists, Greg Simmons, or maybe a unity that is being chipped away at in terms of this war as it continues to drag on? I mean, I'm not too sure whether all countries are united, NATO member countries, in wanting this war to continue in the form and manner that it is. Especially, I'm curious as to what you think about how some of these countries, I'm sure, are thinking, you know, the U.S. Is one of the driving factors behind this war just continuing to continue.
Absolutely. I mean, the so-called unity is a facade, and it's a rather weak facade by now. I mean, one of the ways they're trying to do this is to denounce any kind of political party or country that wants to have a reasonable, balanced approach to its foreign policy. For example, Hungary, or now this potential Slovakia, by labeling them pro-Russian parties. But this is not the case. I mean, they are pro-national interest. So they try to use this to unity by coercing this. Now, we have two things which are going to put an end to this play of unity. One of them is economic matters, because the EU is deindustrializing. It's absolutely in shambles. You've got different inflation, all of these different things are biting at it. So financial matters are going to be one. The second one is going to be those factors related to culture and identity, because Slovakia was one of those countries which suffered a rather brutal Nazi occupation. And now you're having these scenes, for example, in the Canadian Parliament, when they're openly welcoming and greeting Nazis from that period. So, I mean, this is going to be another factor that wears things down. So, I mean, the only reason there's unity there is because the U.S., which, as you mentioned, is the main driving factor keeping this war going, is forcing its system of client and vassal states to keep it going at their expense.
All right, thank you very much for that, Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst, and Greg Simmons, independent researcher and author. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
Now, in France, the government continues to enforce controversial budget cuts via an executive order, and even as the West's economic woes continue to rage. Now, people took to the streets around the country demanding action on a long-running housing crisis, which has reached new proportions amid record inflation. From Paris, Rami Mazahari has more.
In the past few presidential elections, the number one voter demand has been to address housing issues, which are suffered by one out of every four people in France. Many consider the European refugee crisis to be in its eighth year, adding to the national housing policy failure. The failure of Western sanctions on Russia has helped rent to explode over the last year by over 7%, or an entire monthly payment. Major demonstrations were held across the country to demand the government finally take action for adequate and stable shelter.
The government isn't proposing any solutions for these people with housing problems or who are completely homeless. These are people who work, who pay their taxes, and yet still find themselves on the streets. It's a big, big problem, but we don't expect anything from this government, given how they responded to the fair requests of the Yellow Vests.
Demonstrators demanded rent freezes and reductions, the taxing of real estate corporations and multiple homeowners, and the requisitioning of a record 3.2 million empty lodgings. However, historically, there have been few signs that the administration of Emmanuel Macron is interested in dialogue. The 2024 budget has just been released, but don't expect to see it debated in Parliament. President Macron has just used his usual executive decree to force through yet another austerity budget with billions in cuts to government services despite the record economic hardship.
Macron uses the 49.3 executive decree, so the people remain silent. People are scared, and that's now our biggest problem. This fear has led to inaction and political apathy, and that's even though I hear everyone around me relating how bad things are going for them and for society. I don't understand their inaction, but I do understand their fear of getting involved, given the massive repression and lack of democracy here.
Many say that housing is actually an issue which any committed government can fix in just a few years. By making laws which favor tenants and not rich landlords, by putting more taxes into building public housing, and by creating more shelters for those with emergency needs. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Okay, that report brings us to the end of this broadcast from Tehran.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of piano.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 1st, 2023. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is broadcast on Sunday. It's a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. Tell us which program or programs you like the most. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Well, Welcome back. Today is October 1st, 2023, and this is another edition of Listeners Special. And as usual, we've received reception reports from around the world, including from Mukarram Hussein from Bangladesh, from P.S. Sekar from India, and from Juan Coba from Spain. So, Mukarram, P.S. Sekar, and Juan, thank you for your kindness. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And let's see who has sent us email from around the world. Yes, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. Here we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio from Japan. Also, Andre Pagam from Portugal has sent us a piece of email. Andre, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name. Anyway, I do apologize if I mispronounce your name. And the last but not the least is an email from Harald Seuss from Austria, who is one of our old and regular listeners. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. And here we start with an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar says, "Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam from Bangladesh. I learned from Radio Tehran English service that the speech made by the President of Iran, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, condemning and protesting the desecration of the Holy Quran in Europe and America in this year's session of the United Nations General Assembly has created a stir in the whole world. It is also appreciated in Muslim countries. There is a flood of likes and positive comments about this news on social media. Honorable President of Iran, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, holding the Quran at the United Nations, standing on the international stage. The speech given by the Iranian president with the Holy Quran in his hands has naturally been published in almost all the media of the world. The European and American media, including the United Nations website, could not avoid publishing it. Through this, it has been possible to convey the position and a statement of the Muslim world against insulting the Quran to the Muslim society. This bold speech of the Iranian president at the World Forum will make an important contribution to lighten up the people in the world and awaken humanity in Muslim society. Muslim haters can no longer show the audacity to burn the holy book of Quran. All Muslim leaders must stand tall for the Quran in the world court. I applaud the timely speech of the Iranian president at the UN General Assembly. I am ending today with the hope that Allah will grant understanding and guidance to the enemies of Quran." Well, first of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, our old time and regular listener. You, first of all, thank you for this email. It was detailed and it was thoughtful. You mentioned really good points about the recent speech of the Iranian president, Dr. Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, the 78th meeting of the UN General Assembly. It seems that you've listened to President Raisi's speech carefully, and as you mentioned, this bold action of President Raisi actually will make an important contribution to lighten up the people in the world and awaken humanity in the Muslim society. Well, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, again, thank you for this email. Please write to us soon and tell us more and more about the world developments, about your views, about IRIB English Radio broadcast, and anything you like. But this was great, and it really made my day. Thank you. And my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Welcome back. From Japan, we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio. Hitoshi says, "Dear staff, my name is Hitoshi Sugio. I am 51 years old and I work in municipality here in Hyogo, Japan. I've received your program and I would like to give you a report. I request you to send me your verification card or letter to my address in Japan or by email. Thank you in advance." Salam and warm greetings to you, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan, and appreciations to you for this email. Of course, an EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as verification to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan. And from Portugal, we've received an email from Andre Pagam. Andre says, "Hello, my name is Andre Pagam from Portugal. I'm starting to listen to the radio. I was trying to listen to something and I came across to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The reception was very good and the news program was clean and completely understandable. As this is my first contact, I would like to request a QSL card if it is possible to be sent to me by post. Yours sincerely." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Andre Pagam from Portugal. And this greeting comes from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English Radio staff for you. Thank you very much for this email. So it seems that you've already joined the world of IRIB English Radio. And this is your first contact with IRIB English Radio. We welcome any view or outlook about our radio broadcast and the quality of our program. And we are so happy that you mentioned that you found the reception very good and the news program clean and completely understandable. It's good to hear that. So tell us which program or programs you like the best, Andre. Anyway, please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio regularly and be our old and regular listener. And each QSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. This is Listeners Special, and here we have an email from Austria from Harald Seuss, our old and regular listener. Harald Seuss says, "Dear staff of the English service of Pars Today or IRIB English Radio, I've listened to your radio. I will ask you if you can verify my report by QSL card or EQSL. I send you best greetings to you and your nice country and hope to get an answer from you. Best regards from Austria." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Harald Seuss from Austria. And please accept our warm appreciations and gratitudes to you for this email. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email. Harald Suss. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And here we come to the end of our today's program. But before saying goodbye, I wanted to send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Juan Kaba from Spain, P.S. Sakar from India, Makaram Hussein from Bangladesh, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan, Andre Pagam from Portugal, and Harald Suss from Austria, and of course many of our listeners which their emails and letters, because of the lack of time, we couldn't read their emails and letters in this edition, but later on we will read their messages. So please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and your favorite program listeners special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
The Prophet is known as Khatamul Anbiya. He is the last of the prophets. But then there is one ayat where he talks about this issue of the previous prophets who were asked to prophesize and let their people know about coming of Muhammad. But there the name that Allah gave them was the name Ahmad. And this is from Surah number 61, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Is qala Isa ibn Maryam, and this is a quotation of Isa ibn Maryam, talking to his followers, the Christians, Ya Bani Israel, inni Rasulullah ilaykum. I am the messenger of Allah to you, O the Bani Israel, musaddiqan lima bayna yadayya min at-Tawrat. I am here to confirm the book which came before me, Tawrat, the book of Musa alayhi salam. But I am not only here to confirm what came before, wa mubashiran bi rasulin ya'ti min ba'di. And I'm here to give you the good news of the messenger who will come after me. Ismuhu Ahmad. His name would be Ahmad. So we'll inshallah, you know, go through this name Ahmad and see, you know, if there is any indication of that in the present Bible or not. The name Muhammad was common, but the name used by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for him in the previous scriptures, Ahmad, was not known among the Arabs. So let us now see whether, you know, this mention of the name of the Prophet is there in the Bible which exists now. Bible is of in two parts. The first part is the Old Testament, the Jewish part of the Bible. The second part is the New Testament, which is the scripture of the Christians. In the second part, Gospel of John, Isa basically is talking to his disciples that, you know, my mission is coming to the end as far as this phase of my life is concerned. But God will send somebody else after a time to continue the mission of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Look at the words that he uses there. This is in Gospel of John, chapter 14, verse 16 to 17. Based on the King James Version, the famous translation that they have in English. And this is where Isa says to his followers, "And I shall pray to the Father, and he shall give you another comforter." Comforter with C, not the comforter we have at home. Huh? We're talking about somebody who will come and, you know, make us comfortable as far as our salvation is concerned, that he may abide with you forever, and even the Spirit of Truth. There is another translation of the Bible, which is known as the Scholar's Version. This is a newer, translation. And there the wordings are that Isa says to his followers, "At my request, the Father will provide you with yet another advocate." They have preferred the word advocate to the word comforter, the authentic spirit who will be with you forever. Again, going back to Gospel of John, chapter 16, verse 7 to 13, again, there is another quotation from Isa ibn Maryam where he says, "Nonetheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. He will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself. Whatever he shall hear, shall he speak." We'll come to this latter part of, you know, this description of the new prophet later on. Going back to the scholar's version of this translation of this piece of the quotation from Isa, slightly, you know, better, where they say, "But I'm telling you the truth. You will be better off to have me leave. You see, if I don't leave, the advocate can't come to you. If I go, I will send the advocate to you. When the advocate comes, the Spirit of Truth, it will guide you to the complete truth, and it will not speak on its own authority, but will tell you what it hears." Now, this term, comforter, if you look at King John's James' version, is a translation of the Greek word parakletos. Parakletos, there are three meanings given to it in dictionary. One is advocate, somebody who pleads the case for someone else. What is the meaning of shafi? What does the shafi do? He does shafa'at. Means you have a person here, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the other side, and the person in between pleads on behalf of this person. So use the word advocate or the word shafi. The Wahhabi should understand this better. And the second meaning of parakletos is one who counsels. And the third meaning is advises another from deep concern for the other's welfare. According to a scholar who was from the Christian background, converted to Islam later on, Suleiman Shahid Mufassir, he says that according to some of the scholars, Jesus was not Greek. You know, they have the oldest, you know, scriptures that they have are in Eastern European language. The language spoken by Jesus was Aramaic. And it says if you look at the Greek word periklios, which means admirable or glorified. And this is where they are saying that, you know, according to him, he says this word periklios is more closer to the words of Isa, and that is actually the translation of the word Muhammad or the word Ahmad. And so we know that what exists now is not exactly the actual Torah and Injil, you know, especially when it comes to Injil. Injil was revealed on Isa alayhi salam, whereas the New Testament is actually Gospels written by not only the disciples, actually the disciples of the disciples of Isa. So what is there in New Testament is more, you know, equivalent to hadith that we have, that the Sahaba quoted the words of Rasulullah. And so it's not Injil in that way. Yet things have still survived where you see that Isa ibn Maryam talks about a prophet who will come in the future. And by looking at the Greek word, which is very closer to the meaning of Ahmad and Muhammad, we see that the truth has still survived in the present version of the Bible.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In its Fall 2023 Global Economic Prospects Report, the Washington-based economic think tank projected that, on a year-over-year basis, UK real GDP growth would decline 0.3% in 2023 and 0.2% in 2024. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to The Guardian, citing a study by the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics, PIIE, The British economy will shrink in both 2023 and 2024. According to the report, persistent inflation, falling real incomes of low-income households, and a shortage of workers will result in a 0.3% drop in the country's gross domestic product GDP this year, and a further 0.2% backslide next year. PIIE President Adam Posen told The Guardian, the UK won't be in recession all of next year, but the recovery will be held back by higher than expected inflation, and in response, the Bank of England will need to keep interest rates higher for longer. Posen, who used to work on the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, noted that the UK economy is also still weighed down by the after effects of Brexit and will likely suffer from planned cuts to government spending next year. Recently, the central bank refrained from hiking interest rates for the first time in nearly 2 years after a surprise drop in inflation in August to 6.7% amid weaker growth in food prices and a reduction in accommodation and air travel costs. However, UK inflation remains the highest among G7 economies. Posen warned that more rate hikes are possible in the coming month if inflation doesn't slow further. Karen Dinan, a co-author of the report, mirrored the Institute's warning and said it does not apply to the UK alone. She stated, while inflation appears to be receding in most countries, it remains decidedly above central bank targets. As a result, most central banks will need to keep their policy rates high over the coming year, with the resulting tight financial conditions holding back demand and slowing economic activity. According to CNBC, UK gross domestic product fell by 0.5% in July, below the 0.2% contraction forecast in a Reuters poll of economists. Services output was the main drag, the Office for National Statistics said, declining 0.5%. The economy puts in a better-than-expected performance for the second quarter as a whole, with the ONS reiterating its reading of 0.2% growth. July surprise dip meant the economy shrank at its fastest pace since December, according to the ONS figures. It is the latest sign of economic strain in the higher interest rate environment. Recently, figures showed UK mortgages in arrears jumped to a 7-year high in the 3 months to June. Major investment bank trimmed their UK growth expectations following the reading. Goldman Sachs revised its annual growth forecast to 0.3% from 0.5%, while JP Morgan downgraded its 2023 forecast to 0.4% from 0.6% and its 2024 forecast to 0.2% from 0.4%. James Smith, developed markets economist at ING, said in a note that cutting through the noise, the economy seems to be still growing, albeit fractionally. We think the economy is likely to more or less flatline over coming quarters amid the recession that can't be ruled out. Paul Dales, chief UK economist at Capital Economics, said the GDP figures may indicate a recession has already begun, and underlying growth has lost momentum since earlier in the year. Dale's highlighted strikes and unusually wet weather as weighing on certain sectors, but said output declined more broadly, suggesting widespread weakness. Dale said, even so, with wage growth still uncomfortably strong, we suspect the Bank of England will still raise interest rates one final time next week, from 5.25% to 5.50%. A potential concern for the central bank came recently when data showed annual growth in pay, including bonuses, which remained steady at 7.8%, the highest on record. This was combined with a sign of a slight cooling in the labor market, as unemployment rose 5/10 percentage points. The British pound was 2/10 percent lower against the US dollar at $1.245 at 8:40 a.m. as it declined against euro. Jane Foley, head of FX strategy at Rabobank, said the BOE faced a difficult predicament given a strong earnings data and a slower UK growth. She said via email, while the market is assuming that a September rate hike is a done deal, the uncertainty for following meetings is rising. Clearly, too much tightening would risk a UK recession, and this possibility appears a little stronger after today's monthly GDP report. Adding, weaker growth data thus increases the chances that bank rate will reach its peak this month, an outlook which is weighing on the pound recently.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the representatives of the people from the provinces of Sistan and Baluchistan and Fars Khorasan. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 11, 2023. Today, despite the extraordinary development of information and security tools that U.S. possesses more than anywhere else, despite this, do you know of any country in the last 10 years whose government the U.S. has been able to overthrow and replace using hybrid warfare? They conspired in Syria for 10 years, but they were unable to do anything. They stayed around in Afghanistan for 20 years. They brought all their military tools. Yet, you saw how they exited Afghanistan in disgrace. This is what we mean when we say that the U.S. has become weak. That situation is not better when it comes to the decline that is taking place in Europe. Well, you must have heard about the situation in Africa these days. The countries that were under France's control are rising up one after another against France. The people are overthrowing the puppet governments imposed by France. Of course, their armies are busy, but the people support them. So the Western powers, which are headed by the US and followed by Europe, do not have the same power they once used to have. They are becoming weaker.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
This weakness is increasing every day. New powers are also emerging that I don't want to mention the names of these powers for now. I don't want to get into that now. This is a great global transformation. Now, this transformation is currently taking place. As I said, when major global changes occur, nations and countries' officials must be vigilant. This is the situation we are in now. We need to be vigilant. When we say that the enemy is becoming weaker, this does not mean that they are incapable of plotting, that they cannot show hostile behavior, or that they cannot inflict harm. They can. They are busy plotting. We must not fall asleep. We must not become neglectful. What do I mean when I say we? I'm talking about our officials and the general public.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.